If you have a child with type 1 diabetes, whether they were diagnosed 5 days ago or 5 years ago, you continue to have questions. These are the questions about the emotional side of living with diabetes, the questions about how to parent diabetes. I'm Joanne Robb, a psychotherapist and fellow T1D mom, and I've been parenting diabetes for almost 15 years. In this podcast, I'm here to answer your questions about the emotional and relational challenges that come with being a caregiver for a child with type 1 diabetes. Before we dive in, I have to remind you that I'm not a doctor and nothing that I offer here should be considered medical advice. If you want to make any changes to the way you or your child is managing their type 1, please be sure to check in with your doctor or medical team. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Joanne, for having me.
I'm delighted you're here. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we can think about whatever your question is.
Sure. My name is Mary. I am married with 2 sons. I live in the suburbs of Philadelphia, and my youngest son, he is 3 years old, and he was just diagnosed this past November when he was 2.5 years old. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. So almost in the 6 months from diagnosis range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's really still very new. Right. I know you feel like you've been at this a long time because you have, because every day is like geologic time. It's so hard and it's still so fresh. You're learning a lot all the time. What can we think about together, Mary?
So lately, and I know my son is only 3, but our original plans were to, prior to his type 1 diagnosis, was to send him to preschool. Since his diagnosis, we've kind of pulled the reins back on that, just because we are still learning so much. And I guess my question would be, what does school even look like for a type 1 diabetic, or what might be the same, what might be different? It may all be the same. I don't know, but it just seems like such a big, scary concept right now when we're just trying to take it day by day with managing the disease. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think that's my main question right now that I have for you is maybe your experience with your child or children and just what it might look like.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a question. When you say, is it the same or different? Do you mean the same or different from a kid without type 1? Is that what you're wondering?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. And did your older son go to a preschool that you were planning to send your younger son to?
So my son currently is, my other son is 5, and he goes to a pre-K, and that pre-K is at a school setting where my husband actually works. So that was our plan, and he was going to go, my youngest son with type 1 was going to go to that school as well, which is a little comforting that my husband works there, but also still a lot for mm-hmm. where we're at right now on this journey.
Mm-hmm. And who's taking care of your type 1 son? Just you and your husband? Other people?
Yes, just me and my husband.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, before we started recording, Mary, you mentioned that you have family that's not too far, like mm-hmm. within an hour. Are you having or asking or have they offered to take care of your son?
We have just started talking about training family. Mm-hmm. Talking about it. So my youngest son who has type 1, his name's Campbell, and Campbell is the only son in our, like the only one in our family who does have type 1. Mm-hmm. So when this came about, it was all very new to everybody, mm-hmm. ourselves, but my whole family. So I think it's a lot to maybe put on others. Like, I feel like it's putting it on others to help right now, because it is just so fresh and new for us. But we are planning on having a training session where my husband and I train our family on what to do if mm-hmm. they're with Campbell and he has a low, or how to do his daily injections if for some reason he needed it. But that is something we are actually currently working on. So we are hoping to train them within like the month. Mm-hmm. Whoever we'll open it up to whatever family wants to learn.
Mm-hmm. And is Campbell, what tech is he on?
He is currently, he has the Dexcom for his CGM, and we are just starting to talk about a pump, but he's still MDI, so multiple daily injections.
Okay.
But we're just starting to do the pump talk and learn about everything.
Okay. And just, what does your husband do at the school?
So he's a fifth and sixth grade teacher. So he, and he's an advisor. So he has like multiple classes a day, but he does teach there.
Okay. So I think it makes so much sense that you're worried about this. Let me just start there. And that doesn't mean it's because, oh, you should be really scared. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's a really nerve-wracking thing. And in a way, it would be easier if he had already been in school, right? Because then you would have wanted to keep things normal for him. And you would have a lot of relationship with the people in the school already, right? But you're imagining starting everything all at once. And that is really hard.
Yes.
Did your older son go to this school for preschool?
No, he actually went to, he was mostly home with me and I was kind of somewhat homeschooling them because I'm also a teacher by trade. So and then he would go to like a 2-hour program twice a week, just, you know, getting into the habit of going to school, but it was in a different type of program. It was not at the school he's currently at.
And if Campbell were to go to this program, what would the schedule be?
There's flexibility with that. So there are a couple different schedules. My husband and I would only want him there a couple days a week just to get him used to the format of everything. However, that could change if I were to go back to work and our schedule would change, but that's where we were hoping to start kind of easing into the process. Yeah.
So Mary, I just want to start actually in a very different place from the question you're asking. And I want to start with something you said. You said it's a lot to put on others to ask them to help.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just kind of want to unpack it a little bit, because I think that that way of us thinking as type one parents about how nerve-wracking it is to ask for all these extra needs for this child often keeps us from getting what we need for our child. So I'm curious, when I say this, like, what do you know, like your reaction when I shine the mirror back and say, oh, you just said this thing about how hard it is to ask for help. What's that like?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, it's hard on us as parents. We know, I guess, the weight that is of every day, just trying to manage, you know, even just the carb counting, like knowing how to count carbs and then dosing and all of that, where it feels like asking somebody else, just, I don't know, it feels like maybe it would be too much for that person. And I want them to feel involved. I want them to know about Campbell's diagnosis and I want them to know everything. But I feel that maybe if I feel more comfortable with it, then maybe I can feel more comfortable asking for help, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
That's where it feels right now. Like we did just start talking about sharing it with others. Like I made a little, almost like a little cheat sheet of Campbell's care, just
great.
What it means, what a low blood sugar means, like the basic stuff, like what his CGM, what's on his arm that he wears and things of that nature to hopefully get that out to my family and my husband's family so that they can understand it a little more. And then maybe that's a stepping stone into asking for more help where it doesn't feel like so much at once for the other person. And maybe they may not receive it that way, but that's how, you know, it feels to me, that it would just feel like a lot if they don't understand it yet.
So I hear you trying to protect people. I'm curious, as a teacher, did you ever have a kid with type one in your class?
I did not.
Okay. And has your husband?
No, he has not.
Okay. So I hear you kind of trying to protect people. And one thing I want you to think about, and first of all, you're only 6 months in. And I really do think that the first year, I call it the drinking from the fire hose year, because it's really a lot to learn. And I'm going to share a story that when my son was diagnosed, my daughter, who now has diabetes too, she didn't have diabetes then, but she was a baby. And I was home with her and she would be napping. I'd have to wake her up from her nap and I would take her with me. My son was nine. I would take her with me to his school to give him a lunchtime shot every day. Wow. Now, this is not what people are supposed to do. You're supposed to get the school to help, but okay. I didn't know how to advocate for that. I did not know how to do it. And finally, I went to the principal of the school and I said, hey, I've been coming here every day giving this kid a shot. I need help. And he said, you've been coming here every day? And I thought the school was so small. I thought, you didn't see me?
Yeah, right.
But I didn't know how to advocate. And I felt all the things that you're naming right now of like not knowing how to ask, feeling like it was burdensome, feeling scared to transfer care. You didn't name that, but I'm guessing that's in there too.
That is definitely in there.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I want to name that we're not born like good T1D advocates. That was not what we thought we needed to know how to do when we started parenting. And it's such a critical job for us to take on because not only because we need our kids to be in school, but because it teaches our children how to advocate for themselves. If we don't model that for them, they can't learn how. And so when we are comfortable saying, hey, here's what we need in the classroom for Campbell, or in my case, for my son or my daughter, they don't learn that they can be comfortable saying what they need.
Wow. Makes a lot of sense now that you say it that way, because, you know, we model almost everything for them. I mean, we do. So if I could ask you, when did you feel like you could start that like advocating process? Like, when did you feel comfortable asking or maybe stating what you would want to see in the classroom or at the school and things of that nature?
So I'm not a good example because I started advocating when I was dying of the weight of waking my daughter up from her nap every day to take her in to give a shot to my son. And it was really a process. The school hadn't had a type one kid, I think, ever. And they didn't know what to do with me. And so I had to really guide the school. And it took it was a process. We worked on it together until actually we got to such a place that the school kind of put themselves forward as like being really good with type one kids. And there were quite a few of them at some point. So
amazing. I love hearing that.
Yeah. That's so cool. It was transformative for them too. And in fact, when my daughter was diagnosed right at kindergarten, and in first grade, another family came in with a type one kid in her class. So she got to have a very different experience than most kids get to have. Yeah. But the school really molded themselves. And I was in some way, and it was a great place because they wanted to do right, right? They wanted to do right by the kid, but I had people say some dumb things along the way. And I had to really stand steady in knowing that we needed this help. So I don't know that that answers your question, Mary.
No, it definitely does. Thank you for sharing that. I feel that, you know, you didn't start off all gung-ho, ready to go with advocating. And that makes me feel like eventually I will get to a place where I can do that, or I feel like I have the tools to do that. Right now it just feels so, like you said earlier, all at once. Like, oh, he's going to be having his first school experience, but he's also just having type one as his first, you know, like it just feels like we're trying to navigate all these channels. And how do we navigate it so that it's a cohesive, you know, cohesive thing?
Yeah. So I have a few thoughts though for you. So it's now May. And I don't know if you were hoping, like your original plan maybe was to send Campbell to school starting this September.
That was the original plan.
I think that's a reasonable plan. I really do. I think that he'll be almost a year from diagnosis. You'll feel a little steadier on your feet. I think that's a reasonable plan. And there are a few steps you need to take. You need to talk to your endocrinologist, his endocrinologist, about a diabetes medical management plan at school or a 504. If it depends, if the school's a private school, it's different than public school. And then starting soon, I would reach out to the school and say, hey, I want to set some dates to figure out how you want to talk to us, not whether, how, about managing Campbell's diabetes at school.
Yeah. Right?
And then honestly, I'd start practicing on your family. Now, I have no idea what your relationship is like with people in your family or your husband's family, but I'd be practicing giving Campbell to them, letting them, if you're going to put him on a pump before school starts, then I might wait for insulin injection till there's a pump rather than shots, because people are so scared of needles. But I would start practicing asking with the people you love and you know love you and want to see the best for Campbell, as opposed to new people who are teachers who have the best of intentions because they chose this profession because they love children, but they don't know you yet. So I'd start practicing and setting small goals. Like I think of this as you've got a river, you got to get to the other side. You've got lots of stepping stones. You tell me what the stepping stones are, but there's something like teaching my mother how to, what diabetes is and what it involves. Taking Campbell there and letting mom manage Campbell while I'm there and can guide her. Leaving Campbell with my mother for 1 hour. Leaving Campbell with my mother for 2 hours, right? These are the stepping stones across the river, right? And you have enough time between now and September to do that so that you will start to feel more comfortable with the idea of leaving him at school.
Okay. That's a wonderful suggestion. I haven't thought about it that way. And maybe it won't feel so big because we've already taken small steps to that big step.
Yeah. So it still will feel scary. I can't help it feeling scary. All of us have been scared when we start this.
Yeah.
So you've got a little bit of a research project to do on thinking through what you want at school. That's important. What you want to see. And what I would recommend is that you are training anyone in the classroom, but not every school has the teacher be the point person for you. And that actually makes sense. You've been a teacher, you know what it's like to manage a room full of kids. And if you're also having to like jump on your cell phone to text a mommy about a low, that doesn't work. Right. So sometimes the person who's managing the T1D kid is not in the class.
Sure.
But if you have your way, that person should come to the class, right? You should not be sending Campbell out, especially at 3 or 4 years old.
Right.
To somebody else. Like somebody should be coming to the class and that should be your point person. And you're going to make best friends with that person.
Yeah.
Seriously, you're going to buy her flowers. You're going to tell her a million times how much you appreciate her. You're going to get her on share.
Right.
All of these things.
Yeah. I mean, that actually puts like for the first time, like a visual in my mind, because I could not visualize how it would be at school. I mean, the whole disease is new to us, but also the school route feels so new. And also I will say just letting go of control, I think is huge because, you know, there are babies and we are giving them over. So I need to work on that myself, but I think that's how we will get there, is those little stepping stones. And I appreciate that idea of having them come to the class and not send it, because in my mind, like, it seemed so scary that I didn't even think of someone coming to the class and checking on them. I thought like I'd have to go to the school, or I'd have to, like, kind of how you put it. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on your school. So most big public schools have a nurse and the child goes to the nurse.
Right.
I think developmentally that's not appropriate. I just do. I have a judgment about it and it depends on the school. But my daughter, the person who took care of both of my kids, was the office person. She agreed to be trained. She was in charge of them for all the years they were in school. She was really good at diabetes.
Oh, that's awesome.
But my daughter was on finger sticks And she would, Cassandra would come to class and my daughter would literally stick her hand out behind her and keep doing what she was doing. And Cass would just do the finger stick and my daughter could keep doing what she was doing. Developmentally, that's what's appropriate, right? We don't need to suck our T1D kids out of class. That might not be what your school does. So I want to name that you have to work inside the structure of your school. That's important. Right. But you and can ask for it.
Right? Yeah, I feel that they're all very, because my husband works there, they're all very so caring. Like I do feel that they would jump on board and want to help. I think I just may not know how, like you said, how to help her. You know, I need to also believe that people want to help, you know, and if I believe that, then because it is a private school and they're very community oriented and family oriented.
Yeah.
So
I think that I've heard horror stories about private schools and I've heard wonderful stories about private schools. So I think you have, you know, if they're all this caring and your husband is there, and I think it can't hurt to ask for what you need. Right. That's where I am with that. To say, this would be my preference, is that we can keep him in the classroom and never should he have to walk someplace by himself at 4, right? Someone needs to be able to treat this in the classroom. So maybe the teaching assistant is the person who's in charge. That's fine too. And it changes every year until, right? It's all fine. But you need to think through, your homework is to really think through, what do you want? So you can ask for it. So you can state clearly what you would like. And they can say no. And they can say, here's how we're picturing it. And it's a partnership. And you're going to figure that piece out together.
I appreciate that so much. I mean, the guidance is just so relieving, I guess. You know, yeah, very much so.
So a few more thoughts and suggestions. One is, I have a few podcast episodes I'm going to send you to. So episode 10 is called Your Child's Teacher and T1D Care. So that could be helpful for you to listen to. But actually episode 16 is called Managing T1D at School, a Caregiver's Perspective. And that actually was with the person who took care of my kids at school. And she just is an angel, a living angel, I swear.
Oh, so I would appreciate that so much.
So you're going to hear her perspective of like what the values are and how she holds what her task was and what worked for her, because she was also managing other T1D kids, right? So she interfaced with multiple families and she talks a little bit about what worked for her. The other thing I'm going to suggest for you is that in August, on August 9th, I'm having a workshop called Beyond the 504. And so I talk in that workshop about how to build a good, positive working relationship with your child's school care team, because there's the medical part, right, that your endo can help you with, and the American Diabetes Association has paperwork on, and there's all kinds of support for how to do the 504 or the Diabetes Medical Management Plan. But there's not a lot of information out there about how to think about working with these folks, especially, Mary, this is not going to be comfortable. They are going to make mistakes. They are. They're going to forget things. They're going to not tell you that he ate something. They're not going to remind you that there's a field trip coming up. That won't be when he's 4, but it's going to happen. Yeah. Right. So how do you stay level and keep in good contact with these folks who you are really in need of when they make mistakes and you feel like, wait, his numbers are out of range because of something you did? How do you hold that, and how do you hold that steady and talk to them about those moments? So that's what that workshop is. And I'm going to recommend that you consider registering for that.
Absolutely. And that's August 9th, you said?
Yeah. And the registration, you could even register right now at my website.
Really helpful. And I'm happy you said they'll make mistakes, because then I will already put in my head that they will make mistakes. Oh, so that will.
Sure.
I mean, I make mistakes every
day. That's right. That's right. That's a good, humble position. I was once running a group of mothers and they were complaining about their husbands. And I said, wait, guys, like, they make mistakes, but we made lots of mistakes. It's just no one was hanging over our shoulder watching. We make so many mistakes with diabetes. And so the question is, how do you course correct the mistakes and keep the relationships strong? Right.
Great. Thank you. And thank you for hosting that workshop, because I'll definitely be in attendance. So
good.
So
Mary, what else can I answer for you, or what else is coming up around this?
I do have one question if you have time. Mm-hmm. We are just starting the pump talk, and talking about, you know, the technology. And part of me is hopeful for it, but part of me is also, I guess, scared. And I don't know if others feel this way. Every time I talk to somebody, they seem very excited about the pumps, and I'm so grateful for the technology. But I think because we have gotten our rhythm down, and now we got everything, like we just learned it all and got used to it. And now, so I was actually wondering if you could shed some light on your own experience with your T1D child, and if they have a pump, and how that was when you maybe made that transition or started.
Mm-hmm. So you have to keep in mind that when my son was diagnosed 15 years ago, it was a very different landscape. Dexcom was not a thing. There was no CGM. We did so many finger sticks. And my son did not want a pump. And I tried to respect his wishes around that. A very wise woman said to me at some point, and I actually feel this very strongly now, it's not his choice. It might be his body, but just like you might tell your kids at 16, like, I don't really care if you want or don't want to get a driver's license. I need you to drive because I can't keep doing this. That's a thing that families do. You're going to maybe tell him the same thing. So at some point I did tell him that. And at some point the CGM technology got good enough. And by then I had two type ones. I was working three jobs, and I went to my son and said, I'm falling apart. Like, yeah. I need you to put a CGM on, because once you do it, your sister will do it. And I can't do this anymore. So I think that my story is a little bit more about how I figured in and how I said, this is what I need. Yeah. And then my kids went along. That said, I think there's a way that your son is going to need a pump. And the reason he's going to need a pump is not for medical reasons. There's actually, I haven't looked at the research on this more recently, but the research used to be that multiple daily injections were sort of equally effective as a pump. I don't think that research was when a pump and CGM had a loop and there was lots of support.
Right. But
the reason he needs to be on a pump is because, or why I might recommend one, is because it's going to be easier to pass him to other people.
Right. That yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we've been thinking of for school, and also just for family. And that's one of our big pros on our pro versus con list for.
And so I would say, give yourself, if you decide to do it, and look, my son was in school on shots. This is what used to happen. And so perhaps it would be fine. I trained Cassandra how to do shots. I trained Cassandra on how to do pump changes, on how to do set changes. I trained her on everything. Wow. So maybe the school would be okay with it, but I think it's easier overall. Like, I attended way more birthday parties for my son than I did for my daughter, because I could call the mommy at my daughter's birthday party attendance and say, okay, push this button now, and push this button, and push this button. So I was never really out of touch with anybody, but I was not needing to physically be there. So it gave her a sense of independence and me a breather. So if you're going to get him on a pump, I would say give yourself a few months before school starts, so you know how it operates a little bit. It is a little bit of a transition because it's different, and pumps are more flexible than shots are. And so the ins and outs of how to work it take a minute to catch up to, but that's also not critical to keep him safe. Those technologies keep him safer, but it's not going to, right. It's not a problem to know a little bit less and be catching up.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. That was very helpful to hear.
Yeah.
And to know. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome, Mary. It's been lovely to have you on the show and to get to know you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was very lovely and very helpful. So I appreciate all your guidance.
You're welcome. Good luck with all of your decisions.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks again for listening today. If you want answers to your questions about parenting a kid with type 1, I'd like to invite you to join our live recording sessions so you can ask your questions in person. Not only will you get the support you need and deserve, but through the podcast, you'll be helping other T1D parents to know that they're not alone with the challenges they're facing. To join one of my live recording sessions, simply go to www.diabetessweettalk.com and click the banner at the top of the page to register. Again, go to www.diabetessweettalk.com and click the banner at the top of the page to register.